You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the mindset and the success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. Super excited and honored to welcome Rich Devini to Making Bank. 20 years as a Navy SEAL officer, where he completed more than 13 overseas deployments, 11 which were to Iraq and Afghanistan. Throughout his career, he has achieved multiple leadership positions, including commanding officer of a Navy SEAL command. Commander Rich Devini was intimately involved in the world-renowned SEAL selection process, which whittles exceptional candidates down to a small cadre of the most elite, optimal performers. Devini was often surprised by which recruits washed out and which ones succeeded. Someone could have all the right skills and still fail, while recruits he might have been initially dismissed would prove to be top performers. The seemingly objective criteria wasn't telling him what he most needed to know. Throughout the years of observation, Devini learned to identify successful recruits' attributes, the innate traits for how a person performs as an individual and part of a team. That's the same methodology that anyone can use in their personal and professional lives. Since retirement in early 2017, Rich has worked as a speaker, facilitator, and consultant with the Chapman & Company Leadership Institute and Simon Sinek. I'm super excited and honored to welcome Rich Devini to Making Bank today.
Thanks, Josh. Great to be here. Thank you.
Awesome, man. Excited to dive in and learn a little bit about your background and everything, and then we'll start talking about the attributes and the 25 hidden drivers of optimal performance. So we're excited to dive into that and see how we can apply that to entrepreneurship and leadership and just everyday personal life and everything. But one of the cool things, you know, you being a Navy SEAL and entrepreneurship and everything, is we specialize. We niche down and really get focused on what we're doing and be the best at it. So yeah. Tell me a little bit about your background and how you got started, I guess, why you got in as a decided to go in as a Navy SEAL, and a little bit about that initially.
Yeah, that's always been a point of fascination, because I grew up in a town in Connecticut, and I had a fairly normal, average life. You know, I was an average student, I was an average athlete, you know, nothing, you know, too huge. My brother and I wanted to be pilots, but wanted to be Navy pilots since we were young kids. And so that was kind of a little bit of our driving factor. And then as I got towards college, I learned about the Navy SEALs, and something about that idea of doing something that very few people could do really tweaked me. And so I pursued a path in that, went to SEAL training. And really what struck me about getting to SEAL training was that, you know, we started with about 160 odd students and graduated 38, right? And and graduating 38, and you look around, and I know I was looking around, I was like, how the heck did I end up with all these rock stars, with all these superheroes, right?
Right.
Because I felt like I was just always surrounded by people better than me. What's interesting is that as I got into the teams and learned more, and these guys became my brothers, I realized that they thought the same way. We were all people who were seeking to be surrounded by people better than us so that we could learn. But also, so it brings things out in you. So I began to really think about, okay, what drives human behavior? What drives performance? What causes people to be able to succeed in certain environments, but specifically really challenging and stressful ones, and how to deconstruct that? And I was fortunate enough to take over a training program at one of our more elite SEAL teams. And in this program, we were taking very experienced SEALs and whittling them down. Well, whittling, we were putting them through our process, and we were still getting about a 50% attrition rate. So these guys who really had 5-10 years of experience, and they were still getting whittled away. And to try to describe that effectively and articulate that effectively was necessary, and caused me to really start thinking about this idea of what drives performance and attributes and skills, and what are the differences.
No, that's interesting. So not even just going through buds and hell week and everything, the attrition era. You're talking about guys now that have already been in the teams, operating, performing, and now they're moving on to a higher selection.
Right.
Now they're going through, and you're seeing that 50% wash out and everything just from that part alone.
Right, right. Yeah, and you're seeing it based on, whether they be shooting drills or different close quarter combat drills. And what occurred to me when I was just deconstructing this was I had to kind of think back to some of our roots. I mean, when you go through basic SEAL training, which is BUDS, basic right. underwater demolition SEAL out in San Diego, 6 months long, and you go there, and this is where you start with 100 plus people and you get whittled down, you go through Hell Week, you spend hours upon hours upon hours running with boats on your heads and carrying large telephone poles and then you PT with those. You do sit-ups and push-ups. Hours. I mean, I can't even count the hours. I will tell you, I have after a career of 20 years and going through the war, I have been on hundreds of combat missions, and never on one of them did I carry a boat on my head or a telephone pole on my shoulder, right? So
right.
So they weren't training me in that moment to carry a telephone pole or carry a boat. They weren't training me to do anything. What they were doing was they were teasing out certain innate qualities. They were forcing us into situations that asked a question. A fairly singular question, not whether you could do the job or not whether you knew how to do the job, but whether you could do the job, right? Mm. And those are distinct, really powerful, how to do the job is all skills.
Right.
Shooting and explosives and cartography can all be trained and taught as skills. Could you do the job when the environment went south, sideways, when everything went to heck? Could you still perform? And that's where attributes come in. That's where our innate qualities come in. That's really where I've started to dig into it.
No, and that's interesting because a lot of times we don't look at it. And actually, I was just having a conversation that I do training for our Krav Maga class. So I'm one of our instructors. And we were talking about the testing cycle and how long it should be and everything. And part of that was coming up. And it's like, it's not the skills, but it's can you do them under this duress and under this situation that you're put in, whether it's 30 seconds, whether it's 5 minutes. And that's interesting. You're kind of bringing up that same topic.
Yeah.
Relating to that, you were mentioned then, as you guys started to then have this higher selection process and people are starting to watch out, what were some of the things that you were finding? Because when I read your bio and everything, it was like the guys that you didn't think were going to make it were the ones that were making it through. And then the people that were like, oh yeah, these guys got this, were the ones that were not.
Right. Yeah. Well, the problem was we had constrained ourselves previously to focusing on skills-based assessment. So just kind of level the bubble here. Skills are not inherent to our nature. We learn how to do things like ride a bike, throw a ball, or drive a car. We're not born with the ability to do those things. We can also learn skills peripherally. Like if you and I sit at a computer for 6 months, we're going to learn how to type. Okay, that's what a skill is. Skills direct behavior. They tell us what to do in specific situations. Again, shoot a gun, ride a bike, drive a car, type, write a note or whatever. And therefore, they can be very easily assessed, measured, and seen. Okay, this is why most selection processes or hiring processes or when people put together dream teams are based upon skills. You can see how many sales a guy has or how well someone graphically designs or what type of top graduate someone is. Skills are very easy to see. So usually dream teams are put together by the best people, and the best usually is defined by skills. The problem is that when we only go by skills, skills don't dictate necessarily how we're going to operate when things go haywire and the environment becomes uncertain. That's when we start leaning on attributes. Attributes, on the other hand, are inherent to our nature. We're actually born with levels of perseverance, patience, adaptability. We can see it in small kids. We develop them over time, certainly, but we can see those things. They inform our behavior rather than dictate. So in other words, they tell us, my and your levels of resiliency and adaptability and perseverance inform the way we learned how to ride a bike when we fell off 10 times doing it. Okay.
Right.
So they inform our behavior. Because they're hidden in the background, they are very difficult to assess, measure, and test. And they are only the most visible during times of stress, challenge, and uncertainty. Because again, if you're in a situation where someone can apply a known skill, you don't see the attributes that are running behind them.
Sure.
If you go throw someone in a situation that it's completely uncertain. No one knows what to do. There's really no skill to get through it. That's when you start to see attributes, right? When we were in SEAL training, running on the boat, running with their boat on their head doesn't take a lot of quote skill, right? For hours, it takes attributes. Sitting in the surf zone and freezing doesn't take a lot of skill, but it takes the attributes not to quit. So I am certain that, there's so many facets in life where attributes are much more predominant. In the entrepreneur field, which you are steeped in, right? The entrepreneur field is steeped with uncertainty. You are running through a pathway of the unknown, which means this is why startups, I believe, are so fast and furious, because they're running on attributes the whole time. It's only after they get running that they have to sit down and say, oh, wait a second, okay, what do we actually need here? And then you have to start hiring the CFO and the COO and all the skills that you need to actually run a company. But getting the company started is largely, I would imagine, based on attributes. And that's really where it was fascinating to me, because this type of behavior happens based on our kind of innate qualities and what we show up with.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely true, because I know just looking back at, with a lot of the different companies that I started over the years and entrepreneurs that I know and worked with, I mean, that's, I've gone in and, you know, you start the business. You're not thinking, oh, well, is it going to fail? Is it going to this? It's like, boom, this is going to work. And you just go in and just, you're driven, you have relentless, that fear factor is not there. You're super focused on, you know, with that area that you're, whatever the business is that you're doing. And you're not looking like, okay, cool. Do I have skills to go do this? And a lot of the times, I was just having a conversation the other day with someone. They're like, well, how did you go in and do this? And I was like, well, I went in and we were having some marketing issues when my wife was growing the company, and I wasn't really part of the company at the time. And we would refer people over, and they would come in and try to do our marketing. Well, we ended up spending like $300,000 or $400,000 of wasted money over the years. And it's like, all right, I got to figure this out. I got to see why is this happening? Why are we getting taken advantage? So then I like focused, learned the skills at that point.
Right.
You know, right. And then I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense. Now I can turn around and know whether somebody that we're bringing in is actually going to perform for us or not, ask the right questions. And so having the skills is good, but you got to then moving them in at the right time, because if you come in with just all skills, but then you don't have the other part to drive you forward and keep you moving through the right. hard times, then you're not going to yeah. get too far.
That's exactly right. And so this is where attributes come in, things like perseverance and discipline, for example. And you know, the grit attributes, I write about the four grit attributes, which are courage, perseverance, adaptability, and resilience. I think all four of those are, well, they're handy in life, but they're certainly handy in SEAL training, in entrepreneurship, because it's about stepping through. It's about performing the best you can in the moment versus trying to be peak all the time, right?
Right.
And that's what you have to do when you're just chunking through. Every entrepreneur will tell you, every SEAL will tell you that, yes, there were times in the beginning where I had to pay my dues by just stepping through the shit and doing it. I mean, just had to do it, right? But then there's like things like discipline, which are kind of it's a longer term drive attribute. And I deliberately separate discipline from self-discipline, because self-discipline is centered around self. Self-discipline is internal and can be internally controlled, right? So we can decide to lose weight, we can decide to exercise, whatever it is. Discipline holistically, discipline like on a long term, is long-term goals, the achievement of long-term goals, such as starting a business, where the external world has a say and you have to be able to manage that external world. This is exactly why those who are sometimes highly hyper self-disciplined don't find it very easy to be disciplined in a long-term goal, because high self-discipline tends to attract or prefer known schedules and situations and conditions, right? I get up at this time, I do this, and you know as well as I do, you're starting a business, you have to adapt. You have to throw away sometimes. Sometimes you're doing stuff that is totally out of routine, right?
Right.
So discipline holistically means can I move effectively through the challenges, of course, as I go towards this long-term goal, but can I also not get seduced by the highs? Because there are high points too when you're building a business.
Right.
And those who have the discipline to say, no, I'm still going to the top, aren't going to get seduced by the peak that's, 200 yards below, right? They say, no, this is good. I'm going to celebrate a little bit, but I'm going to keep moving, right? So these are the very, just fascinating elements to me when you start to think about who succeeds and who doesn't.
Yeah, for sure. No, And it's interesting how you break out the self-discipline from the discipline, because, I mean, I think they kind of get, without actually knowing it, they kind of get all lumped together in that. And you're like, yeah. Oh, okay, I'm disciplined. Well, okay. But is that just because you're getting up every day and you're following your morning routine?
Right.
Right. Or is it the discipline, like you said, to say, okay, these are my long-term goals. This is where I'm going. And then I have the resilience and the patience to push through that when the times are hard or when the highs are the high and you're doing great.
Yeah, when you can react to the external. Again, self-discipline, easy to act to the reacting to the internal. And again, I don't want to – those who are self-disciplined and disciplined are rock stars, man.
Yeah.
they are really – but I really came to this epiphany because this might surprise you, but I am not self-disciplined at all.
Okay.
I am highly unself-disciplined, right? It is hard for me to self-discipline. Yet when it comes to long-term goals, I'm actually pretty effective. And I said to myself, why is that? I can't, just based on my own experience, I can't lump these two things. Plus, we've all seen people who are highly self-disciplined, whether they're in super shape, they eat the right things all the time, whatever.
Right.
And they've achieved none of their goals, right? Mm. They can't seem to get to where they need to go, right? So there had to be a difference there. I think it's interesting to start breaking those those differences out, because then you can examine them. You can kind of explore what it means for you.
So in the book,
there we go.
I had the wrong screen up. The 25 hidden drivers of optimal performance. So we've already talked about a couple of those.
Yeah.
What were some of the other big movers that you saw that when you guys applied, because I know you put together like an assessment and you applied this to the training methodology that you guys were using for the selection process, right?
Yeah, yeah. So what we did at the team was we basically got together. I basically tried to form committees of guys at the team and said, okay, what attributes are we looking for?
Sure.
And we developed lists, and I think we had like 100. We called it down to, ended up being like 36, because whenever you do this for a team, by the way, every team, every group, every organization is going to have a different set of attributes that they require for their
right.
Process, for their performance, right? The attributes required to be a SEAL platoon are going to be different than the attributes required to be a group of nurses or a group of Cub Scouts, right? So you have to figure out what those are for you. If you go through that process, what you'll find is you'll make a list, and there will be a lot of skills that you throw on that list because they get conflated all the time, right? So you have to make the list. And encourage you to make the list kind of unimpeded, but then go through the list and call the skills. Really say, okay, well, you know, graphic designer is not a skill, right? Or it's not an attribute, it's a skill, right? So in other words, if it can be taught, it's a skill, okay? So we had to call those out. We ended up with about 36, and then we began to just apply that to the current training we had. We didn't even change the training. We just started looking at a different lens. So if we saw a guy running through the shoot house and he was making mistakes, and when we were yelling at him, he wasn't able to kind of effectively recover. He just went down a spiral. It showed us how resilient he was.
Right.
Or on the other hand, if the guy was able to kind of bounce back, man, that guy's adaptable. He's resilient, right?
Yeah.
So, we saw a lot of the mental acuity attributes in those environments too. But I would encourage the people, because again, SEAL training is different. And the book is written, the 25 attributes in the book aren't all the SEAL attributes. There are some in there. But what I tried to do is I said, okay, you know, I'm fascinated with taking what I learned in the SEAL teams and in spec ops and the kind of in the unique situation I was in, saying, how can this apply to regular everyday life?
For sure.
And because again, the SEAL stuff gets a little bit intimidating. And, you know, I mean, statistically, not everybody can be a SEAL.
Right.
In fact, we got the numbers, so. Your odds are low.
Yeah.
So what I don't want to do is go, you know, throw out a bunch of stuff and it's like, well, no, you know, only like 0.001% of people in the nation become SEALs, right? So what are the attributes that actually most of us as humans have and can affect our lives? And so that's what the 25 attributes are based upon and grouped into categories that kind of make sense in both our personal lives and our business lives. And then throw in a couple that are a little bit counterintuitive and surprising, because things like narcissism, people don't consider. Things like cunning, people don't consider. Integrity on a team has to be very carefully looked at. So,
So
I think those were the fun parts of the book to write. And I think when people read it, they'll be able to say, okay, I can start seeing how I perform, but also, hey, let me look at my team. How does my team perform? What
right.
can we, you know, what do we need? What gaps do we have? And can we make ourselves better, but also bring people in that we may not have? We may not have considered because we weren't looking with the right lens.
No, that's true. And I know one of the things when I was briefing through the book the other day, there was a section about decision and decisiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think And I thought that was really interesting. I'd like to kind of dive into that a little bit, because, I mean, we're always either making decisions, but, okay, what's decisiveness compared to decision, and how is that, you know, for me or not?
Yeah, well, and I put that in the leadership attributes, because, again, decisiveness is quite an enduring leadership attribute. But decisiveness, the difference between decisiveness and decision-making is speed. Well, I should say speed and efficiency, right?
Okay.
You know, someone can be a fantastic decision-maker, but if they are long and protracted on that decision, where it does not imbue a lot of confidence. And we know that I've had leaders just like, oh my gosh, just make a decision. You begin to actually get less confident, right?
Decide.
Yeah. So decisiveness implies this ability to absorb the appropriate information. And we always had this 80% rule in the military where, hey, we're never going to get to 100%, right? So try to get to 80%.
Right.
And 80% is usually pretty lucky. Try to get it to a percentage of information of certainty about what you're about to do to allow you to say, okay, I'm going to make this decision and we're going to see how it goes. Okay. So decisiveness means to be able to collect that information, collect enough information and make a decision and act and move. Now, once that happens, you know, that, you know, decisions, once you make a decision, it's final, right? You move out, right? But final does not mean permanent, right? Because then you have to lean on adaptability, right? The best leaders, they make a decision and they're constantly reassessing.
Saying, right.
Hey, we're moving out. We're going to do stuff, but wait a second. Okay. That might've been the wrong. Let's shift. Let's adapt. Right. And then also, I don't think decisiveness as a leadership attribute is effective unless you buttress it with accountability. So yeah, so that's decisiveness. It's that combo. So accountability needs to be buttressed, or decisiveness needs to be buttressed by accountability, because a leader that makes a decision but does not hold him or herself accountable is also usually not considered a leader. And then finally, the whole leadership and team ability structure is I explain it in the sense that, hey, you don't get to call yourself a leader. It's often conflated with, you know, person who's in charge is a leader. No.
Sure.
You don't, no one gets to call themselves a leader. It's like calling yourself funny or handsome, right? It other people make that decision. Other people decide whether or not you are a leader and decide whether or not you are a great teammate. And it's done so based on the behaviors, right? So if I behave in a way, when I look at my career, and I was an officer, so I was pretty much a leader all the time, or in charge all the time, right? There were some guys who consider to this day that I was a leader because I behaved in a way. There are also others who I know, now that guy was just a guy in charge. I was not a leader at all because I wasn't behaving at that time in a way that was imbuing this idea in them as me as a leader. Same with the teammate thing. So all these behaviors in these two categories are based on, are you behaving in a way that allows someone to make that decision and follow you or get inspired by you or whatever that is. But so those types of behaviors will inspire that decision in someone usually.
No, that's awesome. And so from a leadership perspective, because I know you dive into a little bit more, I mean, as entrepreneurs and decisiveness and decision, everything, what are kind of some of the other things that you've put around leadership for somebody that owns a business or, leading their family or things like that?
Yeah. So the entrepreneur has an interesting challenge. And the reason is because the entrepreneur, starts very kind of constrained and internal, right? Starts with these. So I put the grit attributes, the mental acuity attributes, and the drive attributes. Those are kind of introspective attributes, right? How do we perform in the world? That's about us, right? The leadership and team ability are how do we perform so that we can actually work and operate with others. Sure. The entrepreneur at the beginning stages, the entrepreneurs need to be very highly tuned in on their self attributes, their grit, their mental acuity, and their drive. That's what gets them moving. Let's get the ball moving. Once they build something, that's when they have to start shifting into the leadership and team ability, right? Maybe team ability a little bit before leadership, but maybe it's the same thing. As soon as you begin to work with other people, that's when the entrepreneur has to say to him or herself, okay, wait a second. Now my job has fundamentally changed, right? I now need to lead people. There may be a little bit of pitching and coaching there, right? Because you're in the game doing stuff, but you're also leading. But just the entrepreneur needs to understand that there's a behavior behind leadership that says, hey, if I'm not encouraging and inspiring the people in my span of care to do their best, to understand their purpose, to work in a way that makes them happy, but it's also effective to the business, I'm not doing much. It's my fault. It's on me, right? So it becomes a challenge of finding the right people and encouraging them to sprint. And this again can be attributes. So the leadership, one of the jobs of leadership is to develop a team that has all of the attributes that allow the team to succeed. So I think as an entrepreneurial leader, you need to do that homework and do that diligence.
No, I think that's so true, because what happens, like you said, you know, you start it, you're running it, you're going, you know, working off that grit and that drive and everything. But, and then that's sometimes the hardest thing, is to make that transition the leader, to that leadership role, because you're so stuck and you're so focused where you're at. It's like, okay, cool. And then you go do this and this, but then it's like, wait, nothing's really getting done because I'm still focused on this, not creating and leading the team or developing the team.
Yes. I almost had the opposite experience in SEAL training, because when I was applying for SEAL training, I was a midshipman and I was at Purdue University, and I had to go. I was fortunate enough to meet a retired captain who took me under his wing. He said, okay, this is a physical test, this is what you do. He sent me to do some interviews with some active duty SEALs, and my package had to go up to the Navy. And I was one of 12 I was only one of 11 ROTC candidates out of the whole nation that got a SEAL package.
Oh,
for
wow.
For that year, right?
Yeah.
So it was a pretty big pool.
Sure.
And I remember that was all over, and I got the word, hey, you got the slot, you're going to Buds. And I was like, cool. And I get to Buds. And of course, I'm nervous because I really hadn't been. But ultimately, I could also feel this sense of calm because I knew at this point it was all on me.
Right.
There was no more. I no longer had to count on a recommendation or someone else making a decision or will you give me a shot. At that point, it was all on me. It was whether I was going to decide to stay or quit. So I almost think the entrepreneur experience is in the reverse. You start, say, hey, this is all on me to get it started.
Yeah.
You get it moving. We're going. And now we're here. And suddenly, okay, wait a second. Now we have to switch because now we are a team. And now I have to make sure this engine, it's no longer me. I'm not the only driver here. I need to make sure this engine is driving the proper way. And I think it's a shift that some businesses or entrepreneurs don't make and they fail because of, or they sell off, who knows.
For sure.
But those who do are the ones who really, just go for a long, long time.
Awesome. We got a few minutes left, guys. Make sure you guys check out Rich's new book. Where can they go find it at?
Yeah, if you go to theattributes.com and you go there, you can order the book off of there as well. We've developed a free assessment tool. So you can go on there and take an assessment tool for the grit attributes, the mental acuity attributes, and the drive attributes and see where you stand on each of the attributes as compared to a survey group of about 1,000 people around the world that we surveyed, right? So you see where you stand. So it's a snapshot as to where you stand on each of those. The leadership and team ability ones are coming. We're still working on those, but they're coming. And then I've put some workbooks in there that you can grab to help if you want to develop attributes, because we can develop attributes. If you are low on an attribute, you can develop it. You just can't train it like a skill. It has to be self-motivated, self-directed, and you have to put yourself in some sort of discomfort to learn. If you're an impatient person and you want to work on your patience, you have to throw yourself into environments that will test your patience. Yeah. But you can do it. You just have to decide to do it. So some stuff in there to help people develop some attributes if they so choose.
Awesome. No, that's great. And that's before we wrap up then, what's one last thing you're like, oh man, I was hoping Josh was going to ask me this, but he didn't. What do you want to leave everybody with?
Well, you asked me a bunch of cool stuff. The only thing I'll add and leave everybody with is this, and it's part of the title of the book. I say optimal performance for a very specific reason. We are, we're ensconced in this business world of peak performance. Everybody's looking at the athletes. They're looking at the Red Bull folks and they're looking at Navy SEALs. And they're saying, hey, how can we be peak, right? And I always got this question, hey, you SEALs, you're the best peak performers in the world. And I always disagreed with them. And this is something that I disagreed fundamental because peak performance is simply an apex. And it's an apex from which you can only come down, right?
Right.
Peak performance has to be planned for, scheduled, trained for, and conditioned, right? So the professional athlete, say football player, plans his entire week to peak for 3 hours on Sunday, okay?
Right.
Because that's what he can do. SEALs were never peak performers. Entrepreneurs are not peak performers, okay? Normal people actually aren't peak performers. The reason is we are optimal performers. Optimal performance is how can I do the very best I can in the moment with what I've got, okay?
Mm.
That very best might look like peak. It might look like flow states. It might
sure.
look all pretty and stuff. And we know Steven, all
yep.
might look like all that stuff, right? It also might look like, hey, I'm just trudging step by step through the muck right now. I'm just making it minute by minute, right? I'm getting through COVID. I'm getting through cancer.
Right.
I'm getting through this money-making process to build my business. It feels awful. It seems awful. But I'm going forward. I'm just stepping forward. That is optimal performance. You are doing the best you can. And so as human beings, we do our best when we understand that our best is sometimes step by step. And if we understand that, we can start monitoring our behavior and saying, and not kicking ourselves in the ass when we're not peak or we eat
right.
the wrong thing or we get off routine or whatever. It's like, hey, listen, I'm just moving. As long as I'm moving, as long as I'm going forward. Oh, and by the way, as long as I understand that sometimes success, like in the rock climbing example, sometimes the way to get up to that peak is I have to actually go down to the right.
Because I
have to find the right footholds, right?
Yes.
I can't go up that way. So I have to go down. So sometimes your best is actually moving backwards,
yeah.
or to the side. And so if we start understanding that, we start feeling better. This is where discipline starts to come into play, perseverance, all these attributes. We execute our attributes for optimal performance, not peak performance. And peak is great when you can get it, but strive for optimal.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I like that because, I mean, you are, I mean, I'm a high performer, I'm, you know, type A, you know, like you and stuff. And it's like, you're always like, okay, cool, I'm trying to get that peak performance and stuff, but, you know, optimal. And then you have peak at certain times, you know, what, like you said, when you hit flow state or things like that, and, you know, you're super focused and really going after, you know, what that one project or that one thing that you're working on. So I appreciate you sharing that. I think that's awesome. So I hope you guys were taking a ton of notes. If not, make sure you guys go watch, listen to this again, rewind it, play it over and over. Listen to what Rich is talking about. He dives into so many different areas that you can take and extract and apply right now to your life today, to your business today. Grab his book, The Attributes. Like I said, I've started this skim through it. I just got it the other day and super excited to read it and really start to extract, you know, different areas that I can take and start applying right now in my personal life, my business, start teaching my kids and everything with that as all. So again, Rich, appreciate you coming on Making Bank. Thank you for your time today. It's been an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you, brother. Look forward to our other conversations.
I am Josh Felber. You are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, Success Thinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.